This is KSL's Religion Today, a weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner, on KSL News Radio.
And welcome to Religion Today in its 33rd year. I've enjoyed hosting since 1990. As always, if you are interested in finding the answer to a question that you may have had a hard time figuring out or understanding, feel free to send me an email. Send it to martinstanner@gmail.com, martinstanner@gmail.com, and I'll be happy to respond. Today's show is about the New Testament, where it came from, what its purpose was, and how we see it today that might be a little bit different from how those saw it who lived when it was written. The first thing to point out is that the name of it's wrong. It shouldn't be the New Testament. It should be called the New Covenant. It's a bad translation into English. The New Christian Church, formed at the time of Christ, was based on the idea found in the Old Testament book of Jeremiah in chapter 31, verses 31 through 33, where the Lord says, quote, "The time is coming when I will make a new covenant with the people of Israel and with the people of Judah." Notice he doesn't say a New Testament. He says a new covenant. And then in verse 32, "It will not be like the old covenant that I made with their ancestors when I took them by the hand and led them out of Egypt. Although I was like a husband to them, they did not keep that old covenant. The new covenant that I will make with the people of Israel will be this: I will put my law within them and write it in their hearts. I will be their God, and they will be my people." Close quote. The New Testament church believed that they were God's people, and God had written his law in their hearts. It was gospel of love rather than a gospel of all kinds of laws like the law of Moses. So let's talk about the order of the New Testament books. People automatically assume, well, the earliest one, Matthew, was written first, and then so on and so forth. And that seems logical because Christianity started with Jesus and Matthew's the story about Jesus' genealogy and then his life. But that wouldn't be true in terms of the order. The New Testament books were written in about this order, as near as we can tell. And this is a pretty good order. How can we know the order of the books? Because of the way they were written and about their contents. Some of the contents of the books describe things that are contemporary, and some leave out things that other ones written a little bit later would know about because by then they had happened, such as the overthrow of Jerusalem by the Romans. That's a pretty big line of demarcation. So it's widely believed that 1st and 2nd Thessalonians were probably written first. This isn't a sure thing. About 51 AD, give or take a little bit. Notice here that that's within about 20 years or so of the life of Jesus, and maybe even sooner than that. That is very soon after Jesus lived, was crucified, and resurrected. Philippians is thought by many to be written just a year or two perhaps after that. Philemon in the same time frame. Galatians is also thought to be a very early one, as is 1 Corinthians. Notice that all these books that I'm describing are the letters of Paul. Paul wrote first. One of the ways that we know that is because he doesn't talk about the Gospels. He doesn't say to the Corinthians or the Philippians or the people in Galatia, and heed to the words of Jesus as we have them written in the Gospel of Luke. You just don't find that. If the Gospels were around, certainly he would have at least mentioned them. What he does mention is his conversion on the road to Damascus, and we have an account of that in the book of Acts. We also have some lost letters of Paul showing that the New Testament isn't complete, at least as complete as it was in the early days of the church. If you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 9, it talks about an earlier letter to the Corinthians. But this is 1 Corinthians, so that earlier letter must really be the first letter to the Corinthians, and our current 1 Corinthians would have been the second one. We also have a reference to an earlier letter to the Ephesians in our current Ephesians, chapter 3, verses 3 through 4, and in Colossians, in chapter 4, verse 16, Paul references a letter that he wrote to the church in Laodicea. The Laodiceans were in need of counsel as well. Paul wrote them a letter. We just don't have it. And yet we know it was important. It wasn't omitted because it wasn't important, because Paul actually references it in Colossians. So after these writings of Paul, which probably happened between about 50 and 56, 58 AD, sometime in that frame, then we started to have the Gospels that came onto the scene. There are some people who think that Matthew was first. The difficulty with that is that Matthew has every single word, word for word, with a few little exceptions, of the Gospel of Mark, and then a whole bunch of other material. Now, if Matthew wrote first and then Mark came along, why would he take Matthew's book and then chop pieces out of it? That doesn't seem too much to make any sense. So most scholars believe, and it makes sense to me, although there are arguments to the contrary, that Mark wrote first, and then Matthew took everything that Mark said, with a few little exceptions, and Luke also took everything that Mark wrote, with a few exceptions, and then added additional information to them that they thought was quite important. The Gospel of John was written late in the first century, and it was written for a different purpose. It was written to those who spoke Greek, to convert them to the gospel. More about that later, if we have time. So why would the Gospel of Matthew be first if it was written second or third? Because it has the genealogy of Jesus in it. And that's a fascinating genealogy indeed, because it sort of winds its way through some people who didn't exactly have a great reputation amongst the Jews of the first century, derives Jesus' line and traces it back. And there could have been a number of ways that they could have traced Jesus' line back. As you all know, if you go back a few generations, you can go all kinds of different directions and through different individuals. But it talks about Rahab as an ancestor of Jesus, or predecessor, rather, and a few others. And what would that mean to somebody who read them? Who read that genealogy and saw these semi-irreputable people listed in the genealogy? It would tell them, it doesn't matter what your past is, you are welcome in Christianity. If somebody like Rahab can appear in the opening pages, she was somebody who changed her life. I could change my life. I could be a Christian. That is a wonderful message. So that's generally thought of as being the reason why we have the Gospel of Matthew first, the genealogy of Jesus. Stay tuned when we come back, more about the New Testament. This is a brief introduction to it. We'll be right back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today.
Religion Today with host Martin Tanner continues on KSL News Radio.
We're back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. An introduction to the New Testament. When we left, I'd mentioned that Matthew was likely the second gospel written. Mark would have been first. Who was Mark? Well, Matthew is one of the apostles, and Luke, the writer of Luke, was Paul's physician, his doctor, his medical doctor. Paul had many physical ailments. Then, of course, the Gospel of John was written also, according to tradition, by the Apostle John. So who's this guy Mark? His name was John Mark. According to tradition, he was Peter's young missionary companion. We read about John Mark in Acts chapter 12, verse 12, and again in Acts 12, verse 25. We also read about him in Acts chapter 13, in verses 5 and 13. And we read about John Mark again in Acts chapter 15, verse 37. So he pops up all over the place. Who is he? He was Peter's missionary companion. Why? Because he had a mixed race family. His first name, Johanna, that is a Jewish name. Mark or Marcus was a Greek name. His father was probably Greek. His mother was probably Jewish. He was probably bilingual and spoke both Aramaic and Greek fluently, so he would have been very useful for Peter to have as a missionary companion. Peter spoke, in all likelihood, very little Greek. And so when they were out preaching the gospel, John Mark would have been a wonderful missionary companion to have. There are other sources for the gospels that are sort of thought of as being out there but have not really been found. What do I mean by that? There's a hypothetical source, Q, named after the Greek word quella, which means beginning, and is there because it's believed that this idea of writing the Gospels came initially from a list of the sayings of Jesus. And this hypothetical idea, the sayings of Jesus, would have been quella. And the scholars believe that he, meaning Mark, had access to the sayings of Jesus, and so did Matthew and Luke, and they incorporated many of them. And whether that's true or not is a little bit less certain than some of the other things I've already mentioned. So what about the rest of the New Testament? Who wrote these books and why? The book of James, by tradition, was written about 60 AD. James is not the Apostle James, but the brother of Jesus. Jesus had a number of brothers. Mark chapter 6, verse 3 says that Jesus had brothers named Joseph, Judas, and Simon, and he also had sisters. We know that James, the brother of Jesus, was initially not persuaded that Jesus was the Savior, but he came around and was a stalwart, an early leader in the Christian church, and hence he wrote a book for the edification of the early Christians that now bears his name. Peter's letters, probably written right around 58-60 AD. Tradition says Peter wrote these for the instruction of the saints shortly before his death at the hands of Nero in about 64 AD. The book of Jude is another fascinating New Testament work. According to tradition, it was written by Judas. No, not the apostle. Judas, the brother of Jesus that I mentioned just a minute ago. the brother of James, the brother of Jesus. This guy, Judas, was denoted by kind of a shortened name or a nickname. You know, you say Pete instead of Peter in today's world. You would say Jude instead of Judas back in the first century. And Jude was a way to distinguish Jesus' half-brother from Judas the Apostle. He wrote a very short letter, and he quotes some fascinating statements from First Enoch. So he was well-read for his day and had some great comments. He, as a half-brother of Jesus, stated in the New Testament that he believed that the Jews were saved out of Egypt by Jesus, by his half-brother in the pre-earth life. Then we get to the book of Revelation, which was probably written late in the first century, probably sometime around 95 AD, written according to tradition by John the Apostle during the persecution of Christians by the Emperor Domitian. This was a really, really difficult time for early Christians. It's of a very different type than the rest of the New Testament books, as anybody who reads the book of Revelation quickly discovers. But it's what we call an apocalyptic book, meaning that it talks about the future and it reveals certain things. It looks a little bit like Matthew 24. That's the only other part of the New Testament that really looks closely, at least in great detail, about the future. So what is the book of Revelation? It was to give the saints comfort going through a very, very difficult time by telling them about the wonderful things that would befall them in the future or in the next life. There are books that were part of the New Testament that no longer are there. And when I say part of the New Testament, that's a very, very interesting comment, because there was no unified New Testament. There were only a conglomerate of books that were considered authoritative. They were not all woven into one book. It would have been too enormous. They were still written as scrolls in the first century. One of the additional books that we no longer have that was very, very well-regarded, highly read, and part of the New Testament books of the period, was written in about 88 AD. It was called The Shepherd, and it was written by a man named Hermas. Most people refer to it as The Shepherd of Hermas. It was written as a manual for New Testament converts. It's a book that was deleted from the Bible in the third century. When I say deleted, it was no longer considered authoritative. And the reason for that was because there were a number of other books that were newer that were popping up. And some of those in charge of the church in the third century decided that only books that were very, very closely associated with Jesus and his family and the apostles would be part of the New Testament. Hermas, he wasn't an apostle. He wasn't from Jesus' family. So even though his book was highly regarded, it fell into disfavor. Another one that was ultimately removed more because it was not of provable origins, it was the Didache. It was probably written about AD 90, and it's called The Teachings of the 12 Apostles. It talks about baptism and the sacrament, but its author was not really well known. Hence, it was removed from the Bible. The earliest full or nearly complete copies of the Bible date to about 325 AD, Codex Vaticanus, Codex Sinaitis, and by codex I mean a book. And these works form the foundation for the early translations of the New Testament into English. And they have The Shepherd of Hermas and some of these other works. Join me again next week. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today.